always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside. Joined on this fine Wednesday afternoon-ish by Trevor Lane of Lakers Nation, of the Lakers Collective, of any number. What all am I missing?
Other stuff, too. There's the front office show, the basketball bulletin. There's probably some other stuff that I've forgotten at this point.
It's funny because, like, this is the time of year where all of us start looking at our dockets, right? Looking at our plate, and we like, all right, is there another like little sliver in there that we can add? Or is there a sliver that we could like free up and do something different with? So this is that time of year where that's a moving target. What we're doing in the years to come is kind of within discussion. But no, how are you holding up?
I'm doing well. I was digging the intro music coming in. It was a nice little vibe to that. I'm doing well. I'm excited for the offseason to really get going here. I think the Lakers are a fascinating team this summer to keep an eye on, but we're kind of in that hurry up and wait phase. I can't wait for like things to really start rolling. I'm enjoying the finals, but I think once we get through the finals, we're going to start to get some big stuff happening around the league. So it's like that. It's like that anticipation. It's a kid counting down till Christmas for me right now.
Yeah, it's even worse than that. It's the kid counting down to Christmas, but who's like neighbor next door is already playing with their toys, right? Because we're watching yeah. teams in the playoffs. We're watching teams in the finals, and we want the Lakers to be one of those teams in the finals. And it's like, how do we get there? How do the Lakers actually arrive at a point where like we are the team, they're one of the two teams that everybody's kind of waiting for? So that's kind of what we're going to be discussing over the course of the show. I just recorded an episode yesterday with Harrison. And then after we were done really briefly, I was like, I don't know about this offseason. There just feels like a lot that the Lakers are looking to accomplish this year. And it made me wonder, what if this is a 53 win team that had some absolutely devastating injuries at the tail end of the season? What if the front office just decides, well, there isn't enough out there. The prices are too high. Is this such a bad thing if we run this thing back? And that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about. I know Harrison is going to be pissed that I talked to you about it and not to him about it, because run it back is kind of his bit.
Right.
That's kind of going to be the focus of this here episode. So a quick reminder before we dive in, use that promo code HMA on Prize Picks and set a $5 lineup of your own, and they will give you $50 worth of free lineups on them. Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, turn on notifications, subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcasts, all of that good stuff. We begin. So yeah, the Lakers are coming off of a season where they took a step forward last year, right? They won more games last year than the year before. Right before we had just brutal injury luck where Austin Reeves gets hurt and Luka gets hurt, both in the same game. Luka's injury takes him out just past when the Lakers season ends, basically, because of the type of injury that he sustained. We got to see LeBron kind of turn the clock back a little bit and carry a team to a playoff win there after playing a completely different role in the month prior, when he played kind of third option and did the little things. That month that we saw from the Lakers was a really exciting month. And I really liked the type of basketball that we saw from them. Still need a couple of tweaks here and there, obviously. I don't think they would completely run this roster back. But if the front office, if Rob Pelinka and his hopefully soon-to-be-hired second assistant general manager as well as the newly hired assistant general manager, if this new front office gets together and says, look, the Giannis trade isn't happening, I don't really want to buy into Miles Turner's longer than we would like it to be contract. There isn't a whole bunch of options out there that are just significantly better than running this thing back. What if we kick this can down the road, get to the deadline, and then maybe make whatever tweaks that we have to then? What would your response to that being the offseason be?
That would be a very on-brand.
Perfect face. The face that you made there was like, you know, that this tape.
It's not what, because here's the problem, Anthony. Here's the problem with that is that we've been talking about for how long at this point? Like,
yes,
they've got all these assets. They've kicked the can down the road. We talked about it last summer. Like, hey, great. They went and they got Marcus Smart, DeAndre Ayton, Jake LaRavia. They drafted a dude, Thero, and they did all of that without giving up any of their draft capital. That means they're going to be able to do something at the trade deadline. They're going to have options. They kept the powder dry, all of that. Then we get to the trade deadline, and it's, well, you know, the right move wasn't out there. Maybe Luke Kennard helps a little bit, but just, to, you know, you don't want to force something. You can't buy a house that's not for sale, all that kind of stuff. So this summer, okay, this summer then, all right, they're going to make the big move, $48 million in cap space this summer, all of that. You don't want to go to the summer and then come out of it and go, well, maybe the trade deadline next year. And here's the reason why. It's not that that would necessarily be the worst thing ever. This is a good team. This is a good team, and running it back would keep a good team, a good core here together. They'd be winning games. Are they that next tier team where they can go win a championship? Probably not, but they are a very good team. And it, frankly, when you look at the free agents that are out there, most of the best ones are Lakers already, right? So that's part of the challenge too. Yeah. Like, who are you really pivoting to on the free agent market? But the problem with all of that is Luka. Luka can be a free agent in a couple of years. It's not that far off. And you've been talking about building a team around Luka and through the lens of everything fitting with Luka, you need to take steps in that direction. You've got to take steps towards building a team that fits around Luka. And I don't think that's what they've done to this point. I don't think this team is really structured around Luka the way they need to be. And so what you don't want is you kick the can to the trade deadline. Nothing materializes then. You kick the can to next summer. And then Luka's going, guys, you know, I could be a free agent in a year. I've just spent the last 2.5 years here. What are we doing?
Watching you kick cans. Here?
Exactly. Yeah. You don't want him looking around and thinking, huh, well, maybe this isn't the right spot to be. So that, I think, is a big motivating factor here, in addition to just the franchise's desire to win and all of that. That's the problem that I have with just kicking the can down the road. I do think we probably see more of a blend of the current team with, I would hope, at least a few significant moves. Like, I don't think everybody's just gone and you bring in almost an entirely new team. So, yeah. But I think they do have to make real strides towards landing the types of players that fit with Luka Doncic and finding long-term fits. So you want to bring in a guy and say, hey, Luka, this guy right here, this guy that we just got, he's going to be with you for the next 3 years plus. And they've not done that so far, and I think that's something that's got to be on the to-do list this summer, whether or not they bring back the bulk of this year's roster or not.
Yeah, you hit on the main reason that this outcome would, I think, set off fans everywhere. And it's that, you know, LeBron has held off father time in ways that we just haven't seen from players his age, right? He's coming off of another All-NBA. No, he was ineligible. But a year ago, he was an All-NBA player. This year, he wasn't eligible for it because of injury, but was still able to beat the Houston Rockets and, you know, be the best player on a team who got out of the first round. And, you know, he's done all of this. He's held up his end of the bargain. And what we keep getting told as transaction cycle after transaction cycle get sat out is, well, you know, this summer, the summer of 26, remember, it was the Giannis plan. It was Project 2026. It was like any number of names that we called it was always this being the focus. And if the reward for, or if the carrot or the you know, that is waiting for us, that is dangling there, is for sitting out so much of LeBron's, you know, last final chapters of his prime, is Rui Hachimura's back. Look how exciting that is. Yeah, it just would not sit well. And you know, it's funny. I always look at this stuff through the lens of Mark Walter taking over for the Dodgers when he bought the Dodgers, and the process that went into putting Andrew Friedman in power, and you know, building out that front office and hiring Dave Roberts and all of that stuff, right? He got to the Dodgers and basically said to Ned Coletti, here is the kingdom. Here's all of the assets. Here's all of the resources. You want to go trade for you know, Carl Crawford and Josh Beckett and Adrian Gonzalez, and you want to go and build out your, I think Nick Punto was also in that trade. You want to build out your the major league roster that way while we build out the minor league system behind it. All right, let's do that. And the result from that was a team that wasn't reaching the heights that Mark Walter was expecting. And Ned Coletti finds himself talking about the Dodgers for Sportsnet LA. And I think, you know, here with this front office, and this is some of the sense that I'll get, you know, from time to time talking, you know, to some of the people closer there to the Lakers there, is like, is this front office, is Rob Pelinka the long-term guy? And if it's a run it back type offseason, if it's another summer where he's telling Mark Walter, no, I promise, this upcoming trade deadline, this or the summer of 27, that's the year that will really, really put the team together. He's gonna go the way of Ned Coletti. And maybe that's worth it. Maybe that's what it takes to finally get the front office in that you know, Lakers fans have been kind of hoping for years. But I just don't see how Rob Pelinka would survive a summer that would be that kind of a letdown, even if it is a blend. That's the other part of this. And another way to kind of attack this is, what does a successful offseason look like to us, right? That way we can outline what the expectations would be realistically of this front office if they are trying to stick around here long-term. So to you, Trevor, what would be a successful Lakers offseason given the limitations that exist internally and across the league?
I'll tell you what it's not. It's not you exit the summer with a roster that on paper is better than OKC or San Antonio, because I see that a lot from Lakers fans. It's like, oh, they can go get this guy, but does that make them better than San Antonio? If that's the bar that you're setting, forget it. There is no success this offseason. It's not happening. So that can't be where you're setting the bar. You'd have to build the best team that you can and trust that, you know, this sport is not definite. We don't know what's going to happen. There's a reason why you play the games, and trust that if you put the pieces together, give yourself a shot, get Luke in the playoffs, off you go. You can maybe do something there and make some noise. But I think what is success is finding pieces that are going to fit with Luka Doncic, having a vision for what that's going to look like. I've got ideas for exactly what types of players those should be. And it's no surprise. You're looking for, you know, athletic players that can defend, that can run the floor. Ideally guys who could shoot. You need a lob threat. You need guys who can provide a little bit of that high motor energy as well. But targeting specific players, laser focused on them. What you can't do is get distracted by players that might be a decent value, but don't really fit the skill set that you need, because you spent so many years not being able to acquire those kinds of players. You've got to land the right pieces to fit around Luka. And I don't think that we're in a situation where bringing back the bulk of last year's team is necessarily a failure, because it's not like there's a bunch of other options out there in free agency. If you told me, like, hey, Mikal Bridges, Herb Jones, Trey Murphy, Derek Jones Jr., they're all free agents, they all could be had, and the Lakers go, nah, let's just run it back with Rui and Luke Kennard or something, that's a different story. But that's not the world that we're living in right now. Yeah. So bringing back the bulk of this roster isn't necessarily the worst case scenario. I could even see a path where they actually stay above the cap in order to do so. That limits you in terms of having $15 million in spending power with that full mid-level, and then you're going to have to do the bulk of your work on the trade market. But ultimately, it's however you get there from here to when the dust settles, you've got to have legitimate pieces that you can say fit on a Luka team and can ideally take you a step forward in terms of your growth as a club. You're not going to be as good as San Antonio. You're not going to be as good as OKC, but can you be that team that can say, you know what? We at least have the pieces that can allow us to be competitive, that can allow us not to go out in a sweep against OKC. They can allow us to go, you know, if we're going to lose a series, most series we're going to lose 4-2 or something like that. And hey, you never know. We get a couple of bounces in a few games and we're advancing to the next round. That is, I think, the type of roster that you're realistically hoping to build this summer.
Yeah, the notion of just leapfrogging OKC and San Antonio is a crazy one, because both OKC and San Antonio took years to come together, right? Even the Knicks right now, that, you know, the building the Knicks was a process that I think more closely aligns with how the Lakers are going to be built, right? Where they didn't full on tank. They grew through trades and free agency, and they arrived here without fully bottoming out. That's kind of what the Lakers are looking to do. But even the Knicks took a while to arrive here, right? Like, even after they got Jalen Brunson, and even after they hired Tom Thibodeau is not even there anymore. That process has taken a while to finally arrive here. So I think, to me, what I would consider, and it probably is pretty close to what you're talking about there. To me, it's like, all right, give me tangible progress and give me the sense that there is a long-term goal here. It isn't just, well, we want to sign short-term contracts so that we can, you know, have cap space again next year. Oh, we want to, you know, sign these shorter-term deals, or we don't want to take on any money that extends beyond this season so that we have expiring trades or expiring contracts to trade at the deadline. Like, there has to be some kind of well-thought-out kind of even multi-step process that the Lakers need to head down. And you know, arriving here with the, you know, to use Rob's term, optionality, that was step one of that. You know, if you listen to Lakers people talk, this was step one, was arriving here at this offseason where Giannis is going to be available and where you'll get the fallout from whatever Giannis trade, if Giannis isn't a Laker. And you know, the maneuverability that the Lakers have built for themselves, that was supposed to be step one. So now we got to see, I think, step two. And like you're talking about, that step two has to have a very precise vision in mind where Luka's not going anywhere, right? He has said it. He said he loves LA. He wants to be a Laker a long time. All of that stuff. So ideally, Luka isn't going anywhere. Everybody else, to me, should be within, you know, the conversation or in the conversation for, do you fit with Luka long term? You know, and whatever, and at whatever number you're going to be on the team with him, and that's where a lot of the guys who are currently Lakers, like, yes, those guys returning are better maybe than some of the alternatives in terms of raw talent. But in terms of fit with Luka, that's like, that's where I don't know that Rui necessarily fits on a Luka Doncic team. JJ would tell you that Jared Vanderbilt probably doesn't fit on a Luka Doncic team. Does LeBron fit on a longer term Luka team? Does Austin Reeves fit on a longer term Luka team? Those are the conversations that I would like to have some clarity on after the summer, as difficult as that is to kind of ask for. You said you have some kind of player archetypes, at least in mind, for what, you know, for building around Luka. Does Austin fit those archetypes? Because that's the question I find myself asking the most frequently.
Offensively, he does. Defensively, I think that's where you run into your concerns, right? With Austin Reeves and Luka Doncic. I think people get too far into the whole, like, oh, it's a non-athletic backcourt. No, it's not. Because it's not a backcourt. Not what we're talking about defense. Right. Luka's not defending guards. Yeah. And people get too locked into, oh, you know, Steph Castle is going to torch Luka. Well, Luka's not going to be defending Steph Castle. So I do think that there is a baseline level of athleticism that you need. I think if you look at today's NBA finals and you look at how much ground defensively guys have to cover and the level of motor that guys have to have, that's what you've got to have alongside Luka Doncic. You have to have guys that are going to cover up a lot of ground, that can run with a very high motor all game long, because that's not necessarily going to be Luka. He plays fine, right? There's no problem with what he's doing, but you need guys who are going to do everything that Luka doesn't do. Going to be diving on the floor, going to be chasing down rebounds, and Luka's a good rebounder, but super switchy defensively. They're going to contest all the shots. They're going to do all of these things to allow Luka to really thrive and focus his energy on what it is that he is absolutely elite at, and that is controlling the offense. So Luka needs certain pieces around him. Austin fits on the offensive end because I think we've seen Luka be successful having a secondary ball handler. In fact, I think it's a necessity that there's a secondary ball handler, that the defense can't just be entirely focused on Luka. As good as he is, he needs opportunities where somebody else can create, and he doesn't have to be the guy with the ball all the time. He already has a high usage rate. You need somebody else out there on the floor that can do some things. And again, historically, we talk about Jalen Brunson, we talk about Kyrie. No, chat, I am not comparing Austin Reeves to those guys. I'm talking about the role. Everybody gets all up in arms about that kind of stuff, right? Where it's, how dare you compare Austin Reeves? Austin isn't the same as Kyrie. Don't hear what I'm not saying. We're talking about the role of having another ball handler out there, whether that's Austin Reeves or anybody else. I do think that is an important player to have. Ideally, that player would also be good on the defensive side of the floor, and that is difficult to find. Austin, I think, is a bit too maligned for what he is defensively. The areas of weakness that he has on the defensive side of the floor are very loud areas of weakness, so he is a pretty easy target, I think, when it comes to that kind of stuff. At best, though, let's face it, he is a average at best defensive player. And so does he fit in that archetype of you need a bunch of super high motor guys that are going to be flying all over the place, can hit shots athletically or on another level? No, he doesn't fit there. As a ball handler, he does. I'll tell you what you have to have is, if you are going to build with Luka and Austin in a five-man group together, basically everybody else on the floor has to check those boxes I was talking about. So that's where suddenly you don't have the leeway to say, well, you know what? DeAndre Ayton's a good value. Let's add him. And he was fine. But does he ultimately fit? Does he complement the skill set? Does he take away from it, or does he mitigate any of the weaknesses of Austin and Luka? Not to the degree that you want. And that's where you could have that conversation about LeBron. You could have that conversation about Rui. It's part of the reason why Marcus Smart works so well, because he does check those boxes of mitigating the weaknesses of Austin and Luka while complementing the strengths. So I think that your margin for error, your ability to stray from the specific archetype of the other three positions, is drastically diminished by having Luka and Austin on the floor together. Like, you have to hit it out of the park in terms of athleticism, defensive capability with the other three spots. I think it can work. It's just a tough needle to thread, because you've got to get it right on the other three guys on the floor with them.